Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly holiday freak show here on Renegade Radio and all podcast catchers. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian, and as always, but not always attired as she is today, everybody's favorite horror writer, Nicole Sachs.
Good evening.
Good evening, Nicole. Look at you with your cute antlers. You're busted out every year. Are these new or are these the same ones?
They're the same ones, the traditional antlers. I have a little reindeer. It's made of gold, not real gold. That'd be amazing. And then I have a small tree that's frosted with also not real snow. And I put them out every year. And then I have these little antlers. So it's kind of like, you know, the Nicole Six family heirlooms.
Right. Because if you had real gold, you could actually buy me a Christmas gift for a change. But I will say, Christmas is here. Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, solstice, all of that good stuff. The holidays are here. And I don't know how Christmas was for you growing up, Nicole. In my house, we would take cute books like The Christmas Carol, The Night Before Christmas. We would sit around on the couch. We would read. We would open presents. That's what Christmas was like in my household. Anyway, we got to throw that away. And today, we're going to have a very different holiday special. This is actually the nice holiday special because next week we got Santa Claus coming in. That's a naughty holiday special. And we're here with our new friend. She is the best. And she teased us because she does creepy Christmas tours. And she's going to tell us all about the Christmas and holiday season like we've never heard before. It's Brissa Miller.
Thank you so much for that fantastic introduction, Mark. I'm very pleased to be back on the show and to share the research I have accumulated about the origins of the holidays. And they're a little bit darker than most people realize. So if this is your nice holiday...
This is going to be the nice holiday. Or maybe this is a naughty holiday. We'll see what happens next week.
I don't know if I would use the word naughty so much as somewhat terrifying.
We're going to have a terrifying Christmas. I'm looking forward to it. Before we get started, I do want to thank you because you are the editor of the Vegan Journal. See this, Nicole? This is your issue that I saw you twice last week and forgot to give it to you. But this is a pasta-heavy issue. And I will say I gave two issues to my mother because she takes priority. And she loved them and is already cooking recipes from them. How do people subscribe to the Vegan Journal if they want to?
They go to vrg.org. It is the 501c3 that owns the magazine. And you can find Vegan Journal on the tab right at the top of the website.
Okay. And I'm sipping green tea today.
As am I.
I have the holiday spirit of fireballs.
There you go.
I should have picked up some vegan eggnog today. I wasn't thinking. That would have been perfect.
Would have been perfect. But don't worry. I could tell you some great stories about wassail, and maybe you can make some of that later.
Oh.
I can't wait. But if I wasn't drinking green tea, I would be drinking this. My favorite energy drink, Ray's energy drink. This is the best. It is vegan. And the best part, zero calories, zero carbs, zero crash. You want to be wide awake for this show, so go into the description in your podcast catcher or on YouTube and get 15% off a case of Ray's. It's delicious. They just came out with a new flavor, ginger ale. And as I said, zero calories, zero carbs, zero crash, save 15%. Now we start. Now I have my tea. I'm all comfy cozy. Let's hear about how creepy Christmas can really be. What is winter solstice? First off,
where would you like me to begin? Actually, solstice is the perfect place to begin. Mm-hmm. So solstice is actually a phenomenon of the earth, a function of the way that the seasons work. And we use it now to represent a specific holiday, but really it is just the longest day and shortest night, and it happens every year in the Northern Hemisphere between December 20th and 23rd. So historically, people didn't have electricity and HVAC and even reliable shelter. So winter solstice was a really, really scary time. Nothing would grow. You could freeze to death. You might not even be able to get water if your water source was frozen. So it was the most frightening time of the year when, you know, what better time to have monsters and ghosts? And I love, Mark, that you started with A Christmas Carol, because it is the most famous ghost story in the English language.
Really?
And it happens to be, yes, it happens to be a Christmas story. So that is the perfect lead-in, really, to thinking of solstice as the thin time of the year. So nowadays, we think of ghosts associated with Halloween. And historically, Halloween is based on a holiday that started in Ireland called Samhain. Mm-hmm. And it's spelled Samhain, just right, to confuse us Americans. And that's not really why. But in the old Gaelic language, it was said, it was pronounced Samhain. And
well, Rissa, I hate to interrupt you. Mm-hmm. And I want to get back to Samhain and all of that. But we have a special guest. So I do want to hear about who St. Nicholas is really, because he's here.
Oh, my goodness.
Wait a second. He's coming up. Speaking of not having electricity or the modern conveniences, apparently his Wi-Fi is very busy this time of year.
I would imagine.
Santa, can you hear us? Hold on. As always, this didn't go quite as planned.
I would say the North Pole probably has really patchy service.
I would imagine, because that's the thing. Back then, if it's the longest day of the year, not only did you not have heat, electricity, no Wi-Fi, no right. Zoom.
Absolutely so, none.
Yeah. So you were saying Samhain, which is spelled Samhain.
That's correct. So, yes, that was a holiday that really got blended with winter solstice. And the winter solstice celebrations were a good blend of scary and downright decadent. So when you look back through time, the festivities that would happen around solstice would include sitting at home with your family and telling ghost stories, but it would also include a wild public festival in the streets. It was to celebrate the end of the harvest and the end of the calendar year. And that happened from the top to the bottom of Europe. And in Rome, it was called Saturnalia.
That's what I was thinking.
Yep. In Rome, it was called Saturnalia, and it would last for many days, sometimes many weeks. There would be a king of Saturnalia elected. It was always a peasant or someone who was a servant, and that person would sort of rule over the festivities. And when I say festivities, I mean everything. Yeah. I don't just mean eating and drinking. I mean orgies in the street, gambling, everything you can imagine is what Saturnalia was.
The king was a peasant.
Yes, always a peasant.
So I could conceivably be the king of Saturnalia and preside over the orgies.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Nicole. You were going to say something?
Oh, nothing. I was just going to say it was pure raw decadence. It's a...
Yes.
I celebrated it 1 year and like personally, just like I was like, I'm not going to celebrate Christmas this year. I'm going to celebrate Saturnalia. And I was just like, it was just a wild, wild week for me. Because yeah. It's about the same time of the year. It's like around the 24th, right?
Yep,
well, that's the thing. There were so many celebrations pre-Christmas that were on the same time of year.
Right. And Yule is the one, Y-U-L-E, that a lot of our Christmas now is based on. So Yule was also another wild celebration and very...
How wild?
Maybe not as wild as Saturnalia, but close. And it would go on for many days, usually 12. And we do still talk about the 12 days of Christmas, though in America, that's not much of a thing. In other parts of the world, the 12 days of Christmas are still a thing. You know, you have all these wild times and wild celebrations. And then comes along Christianity. And they decide they want to make this time of year a bit more pious and serious. Mm-hmm. And that didn't actually go over very well. It was not a popular decision to do that. And it took quite a long time for Christmas to catch on as a holiday. People did not want to pray and go to church. during the winter solstice. They wanted to continue the things that they had always done and have wild parties and sit and tell ghost stories. And it just didn't work out to try to immediately change things.
But why would you want to change from like all that fun to, I mean, you know.
From orgies to Christianity and you know, being in church and all of that.
Well,
I wasn't going to say it's not fun because, I mean, there's still caroling and like, you know, it can be a fun time. Church can be a pious but fun time, but it's not the same time. It's not going to be the same time, a wild orgy in the streets.
Speaking of wild orgies in the streets, there he is, Santa Claus.
Well, hello, everybody. Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho.
Merry Christmas to you.
Meet Risa Miller.
Hi there. Risa, pleased to meet you. I've been listening to your story while I've tried to get on, and they're fascinating.
Oh, thank you very much. I was just getting ready to get into the origin story of St. Nicholas.
I'd be delighted to hear your version.
Santa, you can fact check this, so if there's anything that's not right, please step on in and let Risa know.
I will do that.
So my understanding from my research is that St. Nicholas was actually Greek. In what we now think of as Turkey. And he was born in 270 AD in a very, very rich family. He was a good guy, though. And even though, sadly, his family died when he was very young, he took his wealth and used it to help the poor and needy throughout his entire lifetime, which was a sweet and generous thing to do.
So he could not be the king of Saturnalia because he's too rich.
No, he was not the king of Saturnalia. In fact, he was Catholic. And he actually has some fantastic origin stories that are still part of our Christmas today. I'd love to share. And, you know, Santa, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was St. Nicholas that began the Christmas stocking tradition.
That's correct.
It's a super strange thing, if you think about it, that we hang socks on a fireplace. But when you dig around, you find this old story that St. Nicholas was traveling, and he somehow found out about three poor women who had no dowry. So for those listening, don't know what a dowry is. Historically, you had to pay someone to marry your daughters. A dowry could take the form of money or goods, often livestock. So a woman who came with three sheep was much more valuable, for example, than a woman who had nothing. That said, these three girls were very poor, and their dad had no dowry for them. St. Nicholas found out about it. Now, I'm not sure how he found out, if he was listening in. One of the stories says he was listening through the window. Santa, is that right? Was St. Nicholas creeping around their window?
He walked around a lot in a creepy way occasionally, which is one of the things that he did, but it got the job done. So that's how
he did indeed.
He did indeed.
And as a peeping Tom.
He was. Yeah, he probably was, yes.
Yeah. So I do have to say, though, that his actions after eavesdropping did save these girls from a life of misery as possible slaves, because what he did was he came back by night and threw gold into the window. Now, he didn't know that the girls' socks were hanging by the window to dry, and they were full of gold in the morning when the girls woke up. So their father was able to purchase a quality husband for them, and they were saved from a miserable, terrible life. So that is the beginning of the Christmas stocking story.
And that is the origin. That is correct.
Oh, Santa knows all the fables. Santa, what is the creepiest story you've heard or that you were involved in?
You know, I don't get in too many creepy things. The creepiest thing is I know when you're sleeping. But besides that.
That is a little creepy, yeah.
It is a little creepy, yeah. That I can slip into your house unbeknownst to you and crop things off and not get dirty. And it's an amazing magical ability.
It creepy, is.
I don't really have any creepy stories. Sorry, Mark. I wish I did. Right. Thinking about it, the creepiest thing I do is the Dark Mark show.
It probably is. I think that goes for all three of you. But Risa, what, do you have another good St. Nicholas story that I would maybe not have heard of?
Do you know about the Christmas zombies that he created?
No, tell us about the Christmas zombies.
I will. And actually, that's a great segue because it's the beginning of the Christmas monsters. So St. Nicholas was on his travels, and at this point, he's become a bishop. His actions are so good that the Catholic Church has rewarded him, and he's gotten some advancement in his career. And he can actually perform miracles now. So much like Santa also performs miracles. So he's cruising along, and he stops at a butcher shop, and he has this feeling that something's just not right. And the butcher tries to show off to him this meat in a pickle barrel that he has. And St. Nicholas immediately knows that it's three little boys that the butcher has killed and sliced up and preserved in pickling brine.
So, all the more reason to go vegan.
See what I'm saying? So in an act of charity and a miracle, he resurrects the boys from the pickling brine, brings them back to life, and sends them running back home to their family. And then he turns to the butcher and says, "You're going to have to make good on this, and you're going to have to serve me." And I want to pause there because I want to talk a little bit about the death of the saint, St. Nicholas. He did die in December of 343, and he was buried in a crypt, as was common for saints. And then people would line up for miles, and this happened for centuries, to come to his tomb. Allegedly, it oozed a goo that if you touched it or collected it and smeared it on yourself or your children, it would heal any ailment at all. And I don't know if this was some natural phenomenon of the earth or something truly magical, but people absolutely believed that the goo oozing from St. Nicholas's tomb was a healing miracle. In fact, some Italian sailors thought it was such a miracle, they decided to steal his body. And this happened much later in time, in 1087. His entire body was taken out of the tomb and stolen by the Italian sailors. And in a incredibly a shrewd business move, they sold the pieces off. They didn't sell it as an entire skeleton. So parts of St. Nicholas, the actual saint, are also all over the world to this day. There are some in Italy, some in France, some in Germany. There's some in Annandale, Virginia, here in America. Wow. And I have no information on whether or not it still oozes goo, but I can tell you that he was fully dismembered and sold off to the highest bidders.
I think I had some of that goo in my lasagna a couple weeks ago, but
that's, were you fully healed, Mark?
I'm fully healed. That's why I'm so sharp with the segues tonight. Santa, I know you're busy. This is your busy time of the season, so I know you have to go. But and next week we're going to find out if Nicole and I have been naughty or nice. She's really chugging that fireball tonight, so I have a feeling what the answer is. But has Rissa been naughty or nice this year?
I believe she's been nice, and she's done an incredible job digging very deep into the history of Santa and St. Nicholas. And the three boys in the pickle barrel is not very many people know that. And that's one of those things that he really doesn't get enough credit for, actually. You know, three kids in a pickle barrel. It's an esoteric story, but I'm very glad that you know it, and I'm very glad that you brought it out tonight. This has been quite the honor meeting you, and even if it's only online. And Nicole, I look forward to seeing you on Monday.
Before you leave, Mark, Santa, I have a new addition to my house this Christmas.
Oh, do you? Look, it's Kitty Paws.
He has been a very good boy.
Wow, did you name him Dasher, Dancer, Donder, or Blitzen?
He's named Trouble, but don't let that fool you.
Well, yeah.
I think Trouble would be a great name for a reindeer.
Trouble would be a good name for a reindeer. It would be. There are many names. So where did the flying reindeer story come from, Rissa?
That's up for debate. Some people believe it didn't happen until the 1900s when Rudolph was written. Other people believe that it came from a story that happened in the Netherlands where a Christmas monster flew in a flying sleigh pulled by reindeer, and his name was Stallo. But he didn't bring gifts. He actually came and ate bad children. So
yeah, that's
both of those places.
Krampus, right?
No, Krampus is a totally different guy.
We've had so many monsters.
A lot of bad guys, only one good guy. Hard to keep up.
That's actually a fact. There is only one good guy and 13 monsters.
Christmas, because we were talking about Samhain, Christmas was the original Halloween. It was the scary time. Basically, and Halloween was the nice celebration. The harvest. Yeah, Why did it flip around?
There's a lot of very complicated reasons for that, Mark. Some of them have to do with the Christian church, and some of them have to do with commercial entities wanting to make money.
You don't think Costco has anything to do with that, do you?
Well, like you say, if you're talking evil Christmas, I think we got to go to Costco. I think that's where we start. I guess that's a good segue. Santa always is the master segues to go into the Krampus story. Because Krampus is making a big comeback.
And actually, since Trouble, is Trouble still with you, Nicole?
Trouble is.
She never leaves her side. Put Trouble on camera. Oh, there she is.
Trouble.
I would say she.
I have a friend who made this sweet little Krampus catnip toy. Since Trouble's been so good, I'm going to send this along for him. And
I will add it to my collection of Christmas things I put out every year.
Yeah. Or you can just let Trouble destroy it if that's what he wants to do. But yes, this is a catnip Krampus handmade by my friend Lauren. And it is a special gift for Trouble.
Aww.
Thank you, Lauren. And Rissa, you guys are so kind. So was Krampus a cat? What's going on?
Krampus was a demon. Krampus is a demon. And in fact, today is the Feast of St. Nicholas Day. So Santa, I wish you a happy feast day. It is a big holiday throughout the world, and it is celebrated by St. Nicholas walking with his servant, Krampus. So the story begins with Krampus before the 1100s. So that's a long time ago in history. And they believe that what it was is that it was sort of like the anti-Santa. So anytime there is a force in nature for good, there has to be an equal force for bad to kind of even it out. Right?
I like Nicole in Trouble.
Exactly.
I'm not.
Wait, which one is good? I don't know.
No comment. But
no comment on the matter. But Krampus came from Germany, and we don't know exactly where. That is sort of lost to time. And he always appears in a similar form. He's very hairy. He has horns. He has an exceedingly long tongue. And he's usually
kind of sounds like Ron Jeremy.
He's usually wrapped in chains, and the chains symbolize that he was bound in hell as a demon. But he's always allowed to come out and walk with St. Nicholas. And the reason is that he comes to punish the bad children. Now, as St. Nicholas gives gifts, the traditional gifts would have been fruit and nuts and candy for the good kids. Although I think now today they want like Xboxes or something.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Santa would have to confirm.
iPhones.
iPhones, yeah.
iPhones, yeah. Yes, the fruits, nuts, and candy. That was so, what,
1,000 years ago?
So yeah. 1100s, yeah.
Yeah. So Krampus would carry either a sack or a basket on his back to put bad children in that he was going to take back to hell to eat over the course of the year. And if they weren't quite as bad as all of that, he would just thrash them with birch switches. The modern Krampus can carry a whip, but the traditional Krampus prefers thrashing children with birch switches. So there are whole parades of Krampuses that happen on December 5th and 6th around the world. They are called Krampuslofts, and it can be hundreds of Krampi. Is that the right word? Cruising down the street at the same time. Some people find it terrifying. Some people find it hilarious. I've definitely watched amazing videos of German Krampuslofts.
So you haven't participated in Krampus parades?
Me personally?
Yeah.
Oh, I've gone to see them. I've never dressed up as a Krampus. I'm much more of a student than dress up as a, I'm also, you haven't met me in person, Mark. I'm only 5'2 and like 100 pounds. I wouldn't be a very intimidating Krampus.
No, you need a small wicker basket and only a few birch rods.
Yeah, I couldn't take very many people out. But he's been in more than 10 feature films now. He has his own Funko Pop. And I did find a children's story called Don't Cuddle the Krampus, which sort of makes him cuter, but still a little bit intimidating.
That's kind of what happened to Santa Claus and St. Nick along the way. He was kind of a scary guy and has become the cuddly person you see before him now. Maybe that's in a thousand years, Krampus will be the cuddly one.
And there'll be a whole other holiday.
Maybe. Yeah, there's getting to be quite a lot of Krampus.
Saturnalia will have a comeback.
She's all in on Saturnalia.
Santa, you know about Saturnalia. We were just discussing all the orgies and all the crazy stuff.
I miss those days.
But if Krampus celebrated Saturnalia, I mean, we've been to a couple clubs, S&M clubs that are just like that. So I don't know what's going to happen, but just we can get all together. Right. But so,
you and I should go there dressed like this.
Yes.
The club.
Go ahead, Rissa. I'm sorry.
I don't have them here, but I do have images.
The whips, the switches, what?
Oh, no. I do have images from the 1800s of holiday cards showing Krampus visiting ladies. And evidently, he makes fantastic use of that long tongue to, I don't know if it's punish ladies or just drop in and visit. But there's definitely another side of Krampus that perhaps could be explored for those who are interested.
Much like that guy in Kiss, right?
Just like that, actually, yes.
Gene Simmons is Krampus. He's hairy, he's big, he's got a big tongue. Maybe there's something there. And he's a demon. Now, Rissa, when I looked at all of the stuff that you sent me, all of the monsters, probably the most controversial thing I saw, as it's still controversial, is Zwarte Piet. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Black Peter. Zwarte Piet. Yeah, it's very controversial. It's sort of like the racist Christmas monster.
Yes. Are you familiar with Zwarte Piet, Santa? I'm sure you are.
Familiar with many things. Don't talk about all of them.
Well, we're going to talk about it. Rissa, tell us about
it. I tell you what, have her tell you about it, and on Monday you can tell me about it, okay?
I need to get my sleigh. Santa, I know that you're busy, and I know that you don't want to talk about blackface, and who does? I can't wait to talk to you on Monday, and I can't wait the annual tradition to continue and Nicole Six sits on your lap.
I'm ready for that. Bye.
Trouble says
bye. Bye, Santa. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Bye bye.
Merry Christmas, Santa.
That was the best surprise ever. I love it.
I texted Nicole and immediately regretted it because I was like, oh, I should surprise Nicole too.
Okay.
Yeah. So Zwarte Piet, it is a Dutch monster, and again, another very old tradition, and it is the portrayal of Zwarte Piet, the actual physical portrayal that's so controversial. So even more controversial than a demon thrashing and eating children is the Zwarte Piet, who is a character that shows up in blackface with red lipstick and a Renaissance costume and gold earrings. And they say that he is Sinterklaas, his slave from Spain. He is Moorish. And what he does to punish children is to take them back to Spain for a year. There are so many issues with this.
There's a lot.
All you had to say was Santa Claus's slave.
For a lot of reasons. the blackface was symbolically that he was evil. And again, there's so many issues with this. And the name directly translates to Black Peter. So they have tried to rebrand him as Sooty Peter. And basically, then it's just a white guy who like smears some dirt on his face. They've also tried painting Peter gold or blue, to make him just
a smurf.
I was like, I don't actually know what they're trying to do. Yeah. They're trying to make him.
Well, they're trying to do. Racist. They're trying to keep the tradition alive without right. painting people in blackface.
And right, and without
Sooty them being Piet slave. Is not going to do it. That's not going to.
No,
come.
It's not going to do it. In fact, the United Nations has spoken out against the Suwarte Piet character. In 2018, they called on the Dutch government to amend their public image of Sinterklaas and Suwarte Piet, and even Facebook, Amazon, and Google have said they are no longer going to support any posts or anything that has to do with the black-faced Suwarte Piet. So in response to all of that, the people of the Netherlands have rioted. Some people love this old treasured holiday character, and other people are like, this is so racist, he's got to go. And there have even been riots in the street that included fires, cars being overturned, all kinds of madness, people disagreeing about Suwarte Piet. And
well, we have that, you know, here, but that's all about Black Lives Matter.
Right. I honestly, to me, this is a no-brainer. Just amend the character. You can keep some of the story. It doesn't need to be quite so racist. And I honestly, the Dutch guys, they haven't called to talk to me about it, but it just seems like
you could solve all of the problems. Just call Rissa Miller. She'll solve everything. No more rioting in the streets in Netherlands.
But this one seems to me like it should be pretty easy to make the decision. I understand that sometimes there's traditions, but, you know, it also used to be a tradition that women needed a dowry to get married, and we pretty much eliminated that. I don't know why it's so difficult to let go of this.
I have no sheep.
Right? No sheep.
If you only did, I'd ask you to marry me.
It just seems like it shouldn't be that big a deal to realize that this is an outdated tradition that has lived beyond its initial meaning, and now they could still have their anti-Santa, their scary Christmas monster for the bad children, but they just need to change his image a little bit.
It's like the Confederate flag of the Netherlands.
It's just like that.
Yeah. So
it's just like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was so weird that they could. That was a rabbit hole I really didn't want to go down, but. I went down it like a chimney.
You sure did.
But and then the best name for any Christmas character I think I've ever seen. And another character making a big comeback because it was featured in The Office is the Bells Nickel.
The Bells Nickel. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. This character is close to my heart. It's from where I grew up in Pennsylvania. They have Bells Nickels there. And how do I begin? So the Bells Nickel is another punishing character, and he's usually seen on December 5th and 6th, and he makes himself known by tapping on the window of your home with the end of his whip. So you could simply choose not to open the door, or you can let him in to punish your bad children. So his brand of punishment is usually a thrashing. He usually carries a whip, but he can also decide to challenge the children of the household to some kind of a task. It's usually reciting a poem or singing a song or doing a math problem, something that they should be able to do. Right. And if they fail, he will give them a thrashing. And if they succeed, he'll reward them by throwing presents and candy on the floor. But if they go after it too quickly and they're too eager, he'll thrash them anyway. And it's
something we need to bring back. I think that will help our educational system because we're falling behind.
A good thrashing.
A good thrashing. If you don't know your math problems, a good thrashing maybe. By Bells Nickel.
The Bells Nickel is it came with the Pennsylvania Dutch colonists when they came over. It's another very old character. And basically it was a sort of a cautionary character for children. As far as I know, Amish and Mennonite families in Pennsylvania and Ohio, some parts of Maryland, do still have the Bells Nickel as part of their holiday custom. And because of The Office, Bells Nickeling, which is a verb, is now a thing as well. It's when a lot of young men dress up as the Bells Nickel and walk around the street being rowdy, maybe singing, maybe maybe drinking, more of a Saturnalia kind of activity, but dressed as Bell Snickles.
And what does Bell Snickles look like?
Bell Snickles look like a dirty bearded man in a long robe, sometimes wearing bells, but usually wrapped up in ropes and absolutely filthy.
Okay.
Kind of like a degenerate, you know?
Yeah.
Well, we've got a few of those Bell Snickles around here in LA, but were you afraid of the Bell Snickle when you were a kid?
No, actually, I thought it was a fun story. But, you know, I was kind of a different kid.
I'd say we know.
Yeah, it things like that didn't faze me. I've always been more afraid of the living than of the legendary. So,
when you grew up, were the kids all talking about the Bell Snickle stories?
Not so much. It's something that I learned in my family circle more than my school, and I just never thought of it as a bad thing. I was honestly a really good kid. I spent a lot of time in the library.
I think the Bell Snickle's here. Hear that? Oh, anyway, so I guess you didn't hear it. So
I couldn't hear it.
Yeah, so there goes my joke. I was rapping on the window with my cane. Okay.
Oh, gotcha.
Yes. Can you hear that? Okay.
Sorry, yeah, kind of.
You know about so many Christmas monsters. You've always been fascinated with Christmas monsters.
Actually, this is something I've only been working on for a few years. And as opposed to some of my other paranormal and folkloric research, this is one of my newer projects. And I would say about 5 years. But it was started because my boss at the ghost tour company told me, he's like, you know, I think there's a lot of ghost stories around Christmas. And I said, well, yeah, that's like the most famous one ever. Right. And I just started digging and I said, this is a treasure trove of scary stories and they're all over the world. And some of them are really dark, like the Whipping Father is pretty scary. And
the Whipping Father, please indulge.
La Pierre Foutard is the French Whipping Father. And going back to St. Nicholas, this is the butcher. This is the butcher who cut up the kids and put them in the pickling brine solution. And he is now the servant of St. Nicholas in France. So the Whipping Father is, he's not only a tough guy, he's a cannibal too, right? I mean, he's going to eat children. Sure. And he appears as a person, not as a demon. So yeah, we have Krampus eating kids, but he's a demon from hell. So that feels a little bit on brand. But the Whipping Father is human. And when he finds bad children, he slits their throat and preserves them in salt to eat later. If they're not too bad, he just whips them. But if they're somewhere in the middle, he leaves their parents a whip to continue punishing them throughout the year.
Jesus. That sounds like a great way for parents to be like, well, you know, the Whipping Father left me this, so you better do your homework.
Seriously. You know,
so you better be good for goodness.
Yeah, you better be good or you're going to get whipped. You know, he did also take off in New York in the 1920s and 30s. The Whipping Father had a moment in America as well. He was called Father Flog in New York City. And
I think we've met Father Flog at vampire balls and things like that. No,
that sounds right. And he was known in New York for cutting out the tongues of children who lied.
That's told you severe.
He was a pretty dark character. Yeah.
Sounds like it. By the way, one thing that wasn't on your list, and mm-hmm. as you can see, we do very unusual holiday shows. a few years
evidently
ago,
so do I.
Yes. A few years ago, we had Stanton LaVey, who was the grandson of Anton LaVey, the person who wrote the Satanic Bible. And he said in his household, he does not celebrate Christmas, obviously, but his kids believe in Father Frost. Are you familiar with Father Frost?
I am. Father Frost is the personification of winter. And almost every culture had one like that. Two come to mind immediately. In Russia, Ded Moroz, the Morozsky, was the Father Frost in their culture, and he was kind of a winter wizard. So basically, he came in the winter time when there was lots of snow and ice, and if children were good, Dead Moraz would bring them a small present or food, which was kind of the thing. You want food when there's nothing growing. Right. But he also had a chain made of ice that he would bind bad children with. So yeah, he was also called Father Frost in a direct translation. So then I would also think of the Wendigo in North America. The Wendigo is also a personification of winter, but even darker and way more frightening than Dead Moraz in Russia. The Wendigo is the way that the Algonquin Native peoples and First Nation peoples thought of all things that were dark about this time of year, about the winter solstice. And he was also a cannibal, but he was a physical being and a spirit being. So as a spirit being, he could take over people and turn them into cannibals with an insatiable appetite to kill and eat other people. The Wendigo has been the star of many movies and TV shows. I think he's been on Supernatural and Grimm. And,
I have a scary story. I wrote about one.
Yeah, yeah. And Wendigos stretched across. Yeah, Wendigos stretched across North America over time. But definitely the personification of winter would be a terrifying figure that only comes out.
Well, they were supposed to have a heart of ice, right?
Yes, that's correct. Heart of ice.
Wow.
They were always like emaciated, like they never could be satisfied.
Yeah. Well, I think not. That, Nicole, are you sure you're not a Wendigo?
I'm sure.
Part of ice, emaciated. Okay. I didn't know. I didn't know there's so much cannibalism for Christmas.
It's definitely a thing. Yeah.
Cannibalism and BDSM seem to be a theme.
Why. It's because there was so much scarcity in the winter. Sometimes people were actually driven to cannibalism.
Exactly.
Like, that was the ugly side of winter back in the day.
Historically speaking, she's completely right.
Yeah, I'm scared of cannibals, so I know a lot about them. Even though I was scared of them, I also, like, any information I could find on them, like, I watched everything, you know, the Donner Party.
Right, right.
All, everything, like, and the Wendigo, and the, I was just a Mayan or Aztec history, just, like, anything involving human sacrifice or that sort of stuff, I just, like, know a lot about. But I didn't know all this. This is a lot. Like, I knew about the Wendigo, but I didn't know about all this.
Oh, we're just scratching the surface. You want to get, is Trouble nearby?
Trouble is here.
Okay, could you put Trouble on camera? Because we're going to talk about the Yule Cats.
Oh, one of my favorites. So this takes a slightly, a different direction. So the Yule Cat is a fashion-forward Christmas monster. And exactly like Trouble.
I'm gonna say Trouble so that it goes to Trouble. You can edit this later because I just realized I probably held him up and it wasn't on camera.
We saw him.
Yeah.
You gotta
actually, we saw him better that time than you would do what you just did.
You gotta hold him up to make him look even bigger because the Yule Cat is bigger than a house.
Oh my goodness. Trouble, do you hear that?
So Yule Cat is the pet of an Icelandic figure named Gryla, and Yule Cat comes on Christmas Day in the evening and once again peeks in the windows of your home. There's a lot of window peeking apparently that also goes on in these old traditional Christmases.
Cannibalism, S&M, peeping toms. Okay, got it.
You're keeping up.
Got all the high points.
So Yule Cat, who is a gigantic, huge, vicious cat, will look in the window and see if you got new clothes for Christmas. And if you did not, he's going to eat your dinner, and then he's going to eat you.
Because you didn't get new clothes?
Correct. The thinking is that if nobody thought enough of you to gift you even a pair of socks, that you're a completely worthless person and probably a lazy, no good, non-contributor to society, and Yule Cat's just going to clean you up.
Wow.
Well, thank goodness they're not around anymore. I would have been eaten about 5 years ago.
Did I buy you socks for Christmas, Mark?
Yeah, please buy me socks so I don't get eaten by the cat. So you said Gryla is the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gryla is the mama of Yule Cat, the caretaker of Yule Cat. And she's another one of the Christmas monsters. And again, she's kind of a personification of winter. Because in Iceland, where Gryla is one of their native monsters, I'll say, she is considered a huge ogress that only comes after it's frozen and cold. She's a figure of the winter solstice. So what she does, of course, is come to punish the bad children. They say that she has anywhere each year between 15 and 40 tails that grow off of her so that she can carry all the bad kids back to her lair and turn them into stew for her and her 13 children and her Yule Cat. They say that she did have two husbands, but she killed them and ate them.
Sounds like my ex-girlfriend. The tails especially.
Not the murdering and eating part.
Well, I didn't want to get into that. Because there's a Yule Cat and a Yule Goat. Does Gryla have the Yule Goat, right, or is the Yule Goat a whole different thing?
Yule Goat is his own man.
Oh, let's hear about the Yule Goat.
So there's two different stories about Yule Goat, and I'll start with my favorite. My favorite is that Yule Goat is a figure in the northern regions of Europe that can show up unannounced at your door to check out your holiday decor. Yule Goat is very judgy. And if he doesn't think that you've done a good enough job decorating, he will start to bash in your door with his, my God, what's wrong with my head? With his horns. Thank you. What is wrong with me? He'll just start to headbutt your door until he's completely damaged it. And then he expects you to thank him for this service and to give him a tribute of food for telling you that you really need to up your game and do a lot better with your Christmas decorations. But if you're okay, if you pass his test, he has presents for you in a bag on his back.
I don't think the goat would like my decor. It's been in my family for exactly 3 years.
Well, you know, I have to say, goats, I've been around a lot of goats in my time as a vegan, and I've been in a lot of sanctuaries, and I've met a lot of goats, and goats can be really judgy. They can be really tough. They can be really tough customers to please. So the idea of being judged by a goat is a little bit intimidating because they're very temperamental. You know, the goats I have met in my life might want to know how edible your decor was. Like, how delicious is your tree?
That's what I was thinking. They would eat it.
Yeah. Thing. A lot of sanctuaries collect old Christmas trees to feed to their goats.
And how was your Christmas decor this year, or your holiday decor? I'm not sure what you celebrate. Is it goat worthy or what?
You know what? I'm not going to lie to you at all, Mark. I haven't even gotten that far yet.
Okay.
I've been really busy, and I did get the box out, but it is still sitting on the floor, and nothing has been unpacked. The Yule Goat would definitely...
Because it's so small. Like, it's like about, you know, we're not talking very big, so it's easy to put out.
Yeah. The Yule Goat would not be pleased with me so far this year, and I hope he doesn't arrive yet. I'm not ready.
Because you've been busy giving these tours and telling these stories, which are fascinating. So yeah, you haven't had a chance. So I'm sure you'll go. We'll understand. No,
I don't know about that, Mark.
I don't know. There's the Yule Goat. I don't know, but empathize with the box, because in my family we never went out and cut down a tree or had a tree. We had a tree that we would build. A little tree in a box, and every year we'd get the box out and put the tree up. Mm-hmm. So, and then we would break it down and put it back in a box. So we never, and since I've been an adult, so to speak, on my own, I don't get trees. I don't know why. I just, because I go over my parents' house, they got trees.
A little one to like light up the room a little.
Yeah, I'm with you, Nicole. I also have a little one, although, you know, I've had my eye on getting an all black one and I haven't done it yet. But
goth tree.
Yeah, I've always wanted one, and I just, you know, maybe it's the year. I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Well, it could be the year for the goth tree, especially with all these creepy stories. Now, all of these like really crazy stories seem to come from Iceland, Norway, just because it's so cold. Is that why it is?
That's definitely part of the reason. They're almost all cautionary tales. If you look at them and break them down logically, they are stories to help families get through the winter cooperatively. And I suppose I was never, that I remember anyway, a member of a family in the Iceland or Norway or anywhere like that in my past lives. But I would say that cooperation and working together would have been key to getting through the scarcity of what winter looked like historically. And these stories, these monsters, were part of that legend to keep kids in line, to make sure they were pulling their weight, not eating too much, I suppose, and just working as a team.
Right. Because I grew up in Miami, Florida, so it was weird. Christmas was weird there.
I imagine it was very different, but you might have seen a junkanoo there.
Well, I don't know what a junkanoo is. Please tell me.
Oh, okay. So it is I would say it is a Black and African-American and Caribbean tradition around the holidays. And it started on slave plantations. So
here we go again.
Yes, it does have a dark origin, but this is a happy thing. So even though it has a devil in it, just hang with me.
Okay, so it's not as problematic.
Right. It's not going to be Zwarte Piet. The junkanoo was a celebration that happened every year on Christmas when slaves didn't have to work on their plantations. They would dress up as characters. They would have songs and music and dance celebration. And it turned into a parade over time. And they would go from plantation up into towns with their parade and their celebration for the holiday. And people would bring them food and money and other gifts out to the parade and observe it. And to this day, this still goes on in Miami and Key West and throughout the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. And I believe even as far north as parts of Georgia and South Carolina, they still have junkanoo parades. There were traditional characters that always appeared. And in homage to those who died during Middle Passage when there were slave ships, there is always a slave ship that is shaped like a coffin, as well as a junkanoo devil that leads the parade.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great. So
there's some darkness to it, but there's darkness to that story. So it's relevant. Yeah. And yet I think
I'm shocked that the plantation owners allowed them to even celebrate.
It was the one day a year they were allowed.
I guess that's better than nothing, but that's pretty bad. All of these Christmas stories, including the traditional Christmas stories, even the nice ones, have a bit of darkness.
Yeah. They do. And, you know, I think it's a little more realistic way to look at any time of the year. Like people look at Halloween and say it's all dark, and they look at Christmas and it's all joy. And it puts all this pressure on us as humans who have both light and dark in us to try to be one way or another. And that's simply not realistic. It's not realistic to look at a season and be all one way, to be all happy and joyful and sparkly. That's just not real life. Everybody has darkness and shadows in them. And so does every time of the year, especially the darkest night of the year of the winter solstice.
Mm-hmm. You definitely have some darkness in your Rissa. That's why we love having you on the show.
Thanks again for having me back.
Oh, no, it's so great. I love the glee that you have when you get these like scary stories. That, ooh, yeah, let me tell this one. And I've said before, you have the most expressive eyebrows. I love it. Everybody seems to think Kwanzaa is like a new thing, but apparently I would imagine it's a very old tradition.
It's actually not a very old tradition. And I am not an expert on Kwanzaa, but I can tell you that it started, I believe, in the 1950s or 60s in Pennsylvania, or by someone who was born in Pennsylvania. Because when I was a journalist in PA, I got to photograph the place where it was first celebrated in York, PA. That was a minute ago. And I don't remember all of the details of that. So you caught me slightly off guard. Otherwise, I would have found that old news clip. But I am proud to say that that is a truly African-American holiday to celebrate the traditions that were brought over by their cultures and incorporated into American society.
Right. It seems like everything revolves around York, Pennsylvania. I think the world.
Not really.
You, Rissa, I'm not sure. Really want to know about the Christmas werewolves, because we had.
You do.
It was a full moon last night, so that we I think it's very appropriate.
Actually, the full moon is in
tonight.
Yes, it is at 11:07 p.m. Eastern time. So you're coming up on it.
Oh, that's when we should have taped. Wait a second. No, because it was 11:07 Eastern or 7?
It'll be 11:07 Eastern, and it is the cold moon tonight. Is the name of
the cold moon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the reason I say that is because for some reason, and I've talked to Nicole about this on air, when it's a full moon, I'm never more attractive. Like when I go out on a full moon, I get hit on a lot. Like,
yeah,
only on a full moon.
Hi, Mark, you gotta go live it up. It's a Tuesday.
I don't know if I'm part werewolf or what.
I guess LA is different than anywhere I've ever lived, because on a Tuesday night, everywhere I've lived except maybe Manhattan, there's nothing happening.
There's a little bit going on a Tuesday. It's a little quiet, but there's a few things if you know how to find them.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sure you could find some cannibalism, some whipping, some
no, that's
pickling of babies, all sorts of stuff.
Well, that's
California.
Probably...
California has very little in the cannibalism area. That's mostly Florida.
Really? Okay.
Florida Nicole has so many cannibals. Like, it's ridiculous. Every time I see that, I'm like, I once asked everybody, I'm like, why do all the cannibals go to Florida? And someone said the weather, but I don't know.
Fair.
Nicole, you realize that you're setting us up for me to ask Rissa to come back for a cannibal show. Because the first time we had her on, you're like, oh, come back for the Christmas show. And now you're like, oh, will you come back for a cannibal show, Chris?
Maybe. You know, as she was talking about that, I was thinking of all of the applications people use blood for. You know, of course, I was thinking of Lady Bathory, who, you know, bathed in the blood of young women. Mm-hmm. But let's sort of circle back, Mark, to those Christmas werewolves. Please. I do have Christmas vampires, too. We could go there.
Yeah, let's do Christmas werewolves and then Christmas vampires. I want to
All right.
Absolutely. So,
the Christmas story around werewolves is that if you were born on Christmas Day, it is so offensive to Jesus that you will become a werewolf as punishment. So anybody born on December 25th will turn into a werewolf by the time they hit puberty. So this was sort of personified.
I know I did, but I was born November 4th.
You missed the date. Something got mixed up for you.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
So the Christmas werewolf movie is from 1961, and it was called The Curse of the Werewolf. And in it, a woman is imprisoned in Spain. Here we are back in Spain again. I don't know what's going on with Spain. But she's imprisoned, and while she is imprisoned, she is sadly raped, and the child she has is born on Christmas Day. So not only has she been imprisoned and raped, but her son, Leon, is born on Christmas Day, and of course, he becomes a werewolf. So sadly, the young woman dies, and just before she dies, it is explained to her that her son is going to become a werewolf in his adulthood because she couldn't wait to have her child a little longer. And this tradition actually goes back well beyond the movie. It's another Scandinavian tradition. And in many parts of Scandinavia throughout the Middle Ages, people said that werewolves came out on Christmas Day to, do werewolf stuff. Evidently, they didn't have to wait until nighttime. They could turn on the day of Christmas Day and enjoy the daylight in their wolf form and do werewolf stuff, which I guess is killing people
eating.
Yeah, werewolf stuff. Yeah. There's another really fun story.
Howling
about,
at the moon, all that.
Yeah, howling at the sun. So, because it's daytime when they're allowed to come out on Christmas.
Ooh. Yeah,
but there's another specific werewolf called the Rougarou, and he's native to Louisiana. He accompanies Pierre Noël, the Cajun Santa Claus, in his canoe pulled by flying alligators. And he kind of serves the same purpose as Krampus. So the Rougarou will punish bad children. He likes to punish bad children all year long, but why not go with Pierre Noël? While he is delivering gifts, the Rougarou can also beat the bad kids.
Kids these days, they don't know how good they have
them. They just don't understand how hard these monsters have to work to keep them in line.
I guess, you know? So. And what about the vampires?
So this is an interesting
there's
story.
That eyebrow again. What about the vampires?
So they come from a slightly different part. They are Mediterranean, and they are called the Calicantaros. And they are among my favorites of the Christmas monsters because they're just so bizarre. In different tellings, they can be tiny, like a pixie, or they can be huge, like big, like the Yule Cat. They are always vicious and ugly, and they have parts of goats usually incorporated into their anatomy. And of course, they do have fangs. Now, if your child is born between December 25th and January 6th, which is Epiphany, the 12 days of Christmas, your child's going to become a Calicantaros. No questions asked. There's nothing you can do about it. You're just out of luck. People
garlic,
did try to do
crosses,
things.
Holy water, it's not going to do anything.
They did try to historically bind children with garlic that were born during this time or singe their toenails with fire to get the evil out of them, of the Calicantaros. But,
or give them a pedicure, one or the other.
Yeah, pedicure by fire. So the thing is, you can actually prevent them from attacking. And here's how. So just so you know, if you're ever spending Christmas in Greece or Bosnia or somewhere like that, where they have these Christmas vampires, you can put a colander on your front porch. Just like the vampires of Asia who will stop to count spilled rice grains, the Calicantaros will stop to count all the holes in a colander. I don't know why. But that is the story. Another thing you can do is burn all of the stinky shoes you can find. Evidently, it will just keep them away. They can't stand the stench. They're fickle.
That's not going to work in LA. There's stenches everywhere, but I don't know.
And yet the third way you can distract a Calicantaros is by having tons of sausages in your house. So if you have a lot of sausage hanging around, and I don't know if it works with vegan sausage, but it might be worth a try.
You anticipated my next question.
You know, maybe some Beyond Meat sausage would do the trick. But what you can do is just make sure you're well-stocked with sausage for all of those 12 nights of Christmas. So when they break into your house, which is what they do, they'll get completely distracted eating sausage, which is like their favorite thing, and they won't end up biting you and sucking your blood. But Calicantaros don't just go after bad kids. They also go after adulterers. What they will evidently do is sit on top of somebody's roof and wait for the adulterer to sneak out of the house to go have their illicit love affair. And as soon as that person hits the doorway, they jump onto their back and they wrap their claws into their shoulders and ride them on their back all night long, making them run until they're so exhausted that they can barely walk. And thus the Calicantaros will punish adulterers who show up and have, I guess, they punish adulterers who have the nerve to go out during the 12 days of Christmas for their affair.
Which explains why Bill Clinton stays inside for all those 12 days. Nicole, what is your favorite Christmas song?
Grandma Got Ran Over by a Reindeer.
Okay. Mine is 2,000 Miles by the Pretenders. But Rissa has some songs that I've never heard before.
Nobody wants me to sing, Mark. That's definitely not a thing.
Oh, I thought you were going to sing. I didn't know.
your show
trust me, it couldn't be worse than me at karaoke last week, I'll tell you.
Your show would lose so many viewers, like, permanently. I would feel terrible about it. I'd love to tell you about wassailing and the Mardi Lude, especially because it involves wine, and Nicole deserves it. So the wassail is a very old tradition, and we think of wassail now as a hot wine punch that's usually fruity and spicy, but that's not how it started. The wassail started
hot wine punch, not Hawaiian punch.
Correct, hot okay. Wine, usually
hot
red
wine punch. Yes,
usually it's red wine, and there's like cranberries and oranges and cinnamon, star anise, allspice, clove. It's definitely become a very traditional drink around Christmas time. You can buy already spiced wassail in a wine bottle. I think even IKEA sells it now. that's how mainstream wassail has become. Right. But wassail wasn't always that. Wassail used to be an act, a thing that you would do. And it is sort of one of the origin points of Christmas caroling. So for the wassail, people would dress up. And sometimes people dressed up in like their Sunday finest, and other times they dressed up in crazy costumes or they cross-dressed. But there was a character that was associated with the wassail, and this is probably my favorite Christmas monster. It's the Marilud, Marilwyd. She is a skeleton horse that is decorated with ribbons and Christmas bows and sparkly baubles, and she shows up at your door and challenges you to a battle of rhymes.
So it's kind of like, a rapper.
Yeah. It's like the original rap battle, all yes. the way back to, you know, times immemorial in Great Britain. And people would practice this all year long, anticipating the arrival of the Marilud. And whoever did this character must have been incredibly sharp, because you didn't want to lose to the Marilud. If you did, you had to let everybody in the house, all of the people with her, you had to feed them, you had to give them liquor, you had to entertain them until they decided to move on to the next house. And this could go on for night after night after night. In fact, it was made illegal in England and in Canada because people got so carried away with it that there were actually deaths associated with the wassail.
Wow. The Eminem of his time.
Right?
You got to lose yourself. And then yeah, everybody's dead. So I didn't know that. So that was the first Christmas rap song, I guess. I always thought it was Christmas in the Hollis, but I guess not. The last thing that you sent me as far as preparation for this was the Victorian ghost story.
Well, that's right where we started. Charles Dickens was the author of A Christmas Carol, the sort of epitome of the Victorian ghost story, right? And Washington Irving, who wrote Legend of Sleepy Hollow, also wrote a lot of Victorian ghost stories. And to this day, you can find lots and lots of published books of Christmas ghost stories. It is the time traditionally at winter solstice to embrace the thin time, to embrace that there will be spirits about. Your ancestors might be wanting a seat at the table kind of thing. It was the original Dumb Supper. Does everybody know what that is? The
Dumb Supper?
Okay.
I don't know Dumb Supper.
It's when you set a place at the table for those who have passed, and you leave a space for your family members who are dead. And at that dinner, you will fill them in on everything that's happened that year. Now, it has moved more to be a Halloween thing, but some parts of the world, it is still done at Christmas, the Dumb Supper. There are actually many, many names for it in different cultures, but that's the most commonly known one in the United States. But the Victorians, let's be honest, they were a bunch of folks who just absolutely loved death and the occult and ghosts and spiritualism. And the original Goths were Victorians, right?
I agree.
They changed Christmas forever. The Christmas we have now is basically a Victorian Christmas. They brought us, the Christmas tree. They gave us Charles Dickens' ghost stories. Mm-hmm. They brought out gifting and Christmas cards. All of that is Victorian. And I actually love their old Christmas cards. I don't know if you're going to be able to see this. I actually recently found a vintage Christmas card. And it's,
we can see it. In haste to wish you a Merry Christmas.
You see where he's running?
Is that an outhouse? What's the blue? What
indeed
is it?
It is. So
there was bathroom humor back then.
There's been bathroom humor forever. And so the Victorian ghost story is basically that this was the time of year Victorians refound the tradition of sitting at the fire and telling scary stories. Now, this way predates Victorians. They simply brought back what was an old winter solstice practice. And, you know, it's funny if you ask most people, they would tell you that Halloween is when you tell ghost stories. Mm-hmm. And yet we all know Charles Dickens and we all know A Christmas Carol. And it is the most famous ghost story in the English language. And it's a Christmas story. Even fantastic writers like Neil Gaiman and others have Christmas ghost stories. And you can hop onto any bookseller and find that kind of thing right now. I actually, off camera, I have a stack like that big that I use at my talks of ghost stories for adults, ghost stories for kids, and they're all around Christmas.
Back on camera. But you talk about ghosts all year round.
Oh, I do. Yeah. But that's part of my job, but it's really my passion. And I think that it's always the right time to tell a ghost story and to remember the past. Ghosts kind of give a face to the past in a way that just history never will. Mm-hmm. When you say something like, I like to study history, people assume you're the most boring human being on earth and that all you do is memorize dates. But ghosts kind of bring the past to life and they give it a face.
Well, you're Green. Definitely not one of the most boring people in the world. You're one of the most interesting people in the world. We love having you.
I was just thinking how much I enjoy a good Christmas story. Like, I like to write about the cold. I like to write about the antlers. Like, I think antlers are very interesting, and you can put them on someone and they become more than just human. They become something else. And that's very common in our culture. There's lots of different stories about people or creatures with antlers or horns. Mm-hmm. And I just think that it's just an all around fun time. Like, I enjoy the holidays.
Yeah, I do too. I do too.
What is your favorite Christmas movie, Arisa?
My favorite Christmas movie? FX revamped A Christmas Carol in 2019, and they made it into a scary movie. And I loved it. I absolutely loved what they did with it. I loved how terrifying it was. I loved the clanking chains when Marley was walking down the hall. I love how scared Ebenezer was when the ghosts appeared. And I love how gritty they made the Victorian era look. So often in depictions, the Victorian era is scrubbed. It's made to look really prim and clean. And the reality is that it was filthy. So I really like what they did with it. And at the moment, it's probably my favorite holiday movie.
Yeah, my tradition is to watch Santa Claus Conquers the Martians every year, but that's just me. But
a solid choice.
I'm sorry, so, Nicole?
Oh, for me, it's Die Hard.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
It's a classic. It's a classic.
It is. And, you know, if you think about like Silent Night, Deadly Night or Gremlins, Christmas horror is still our tradition.
It's coming back.
Yeah. We teach it to kids right out of the gate with The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
I have a very fun Christmas horror story called Stag Party, which is about, it's my homage to Hotel California. And it's about a guy who gets into a car accident and ends up at this hotel. And the owner of the hotel is this creature with antlers and like there's hoofbeats and it's very... He doesn't know where he's at. He's very scared. But then the whole place just sort of comes alive and it's very magical. And then it has a very dark ending.
I'd actually love to read it. Is it out there somewhere?
I'll find it was on a website. I don't know if the website's still up, but I'll try to get you a copy of my book.
I would love that. I would love to read that. Thank you.
And Arisa, this has just been a delight. One more question. What do you want for Christmas?
You know what? Almost every year I want two things. I want someone else to cook my Christmas dinner because I get so tired of making my own food. And I want to sleep uninterrupted, like for 12 to 14 hours. That sounds dreamy.
All right. Well, I'll come over and I'll be right over and I will cook some nice vegan loaf and I'll make sure and tuck you in and make sure you sleep. Arisa, thank you for sharing all of these creepy Christmas stories and tell everybody how they can get a hold of you and all that you have going on. There's a lot.
My website is teaandsmoke.com. I do all of my divination work through there. I'm a tea leaf reader and I do smoke scrying and I am a storyteller as well. Oh, and a senior editor of a magazine. So Thank you again, Mark, for showing off the magazine.
Beacon Journal that. Right here.
And I will be finishing next year a certification in being an herbalist as well. So cheers to the new year.
Well, there goes that sleep. And if you do want to read some of Nicole's published stuff, her poetry book, Slow Burn, just came out, and tell people how to get
it. Nicole, I bought a copy. It hasn't arrived yet, but I did buy one.
Fantastic. And it might take them a little bit. They're a very small publisher. But perfect. You will get it. Everybody's gotten it so far.
That's fantastic. I look forward to reading it.
Hopefully you'll get it right on Christmas Eve.
That would be great.
Read Slow Burn by the Fireplace.
And I designed the cover too. So it's really cool. It's a match with a flame that wraps all the way around to the other side. I was very proud of that.
That's great.
You can find me at Nicole Six Books or Nicole H Six on Facebook. And I have a link to Slow Burn in my bio. And you can find all my other stories on Amazon.
And I'm Goth Comedian on all social media. Everybody have a wonderfully creepy holiday. Bye.